is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
It is the spring of 2029. I welcome Henry Sokolsky, the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. The first part of the war game, a week past, to remind 2029, North Korea has launched a payload believed to be a satellite that may or may not contain a nuclear weapon. However, some weeks pass, the protests lead to a confrontation. North Korea launches another missile. This time, it also is thought to contain a nuclear weapon. And somewhere between near space and orbital space, the weapon goes off, a 10 to 20 kiloton range nuclear weapon. At the same time, North Korea invades South Korea. That's where we are in the game. What is to be done? Henry, a very good evening to you. What did you learn from your teams with these conditions? The South has been invaded by the North, and the satellites watching the Korean Peninsula are blinded by the nuclear event, and we know that satellites over the next weeks will be also blinded. What did you learn from the responses of your teams? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Thank you for having me on again. Well, a number of things. I mean, the first simple insight was that a lot of people thought they knew what the Outer Space Treaty and Limited Test Ban Treaty would prohibit, and that this encouraged them to think that the first insertion of a satellite that was orbiting was the concern, because after all, the treaty banned anyone putting a satellite into orbit that had a nuclear weapon on it. And so we assumed that that was the problem, when in fact, it was a subsequent suborbital insertion of a ballistic missile that penetrated into space, but that would fall back to Earth had it not been detonated, that caused the problem. So we got totally distracted looking at the wrong thing because of the way we thought the laws worked. So the first takeaway is you better examine all of your assumptions about the rules to see where others might exploit them and catch you off guard. I don't know that you can do a lot about it, but you need to be aware of it. So that was the first takeaway.
Yes, let's explore that and other takeaways, because the response leads to a crisis that becomes a catastrophe. Seoul cannot be protected, and the U.S. Navy and the U.S. Air Force remain blind over the peninsula unless and until. And that is one of the lessons I take from the teams playing this game, because the U.S. and its allies must have an ability to reconstitute, that is, to launch satellites to replace those that have been blinded. Do we now have such a preparation, Henry? Do our allies have such a preparation in the assumption that we've lost our communications and surveillance satellites in an event?
Well, we're talking about it. It's not like I'm some kind of genius or the game players were geniuses. There are other people thinking about this. I think the problem is they haven't concluded as much as you would hope, and you want them to get on with it. There are a lot of uncertainties after you say, well, you're going to lose a lot of things in low Earth orbit. All these wonderful constellations like Starlink that the Ukrainians are using, you know, will not be functional. The question is, okay, you say reconstitute, and how, when? You're going to have a lot of energy in the Van Allen belts because of the nuclear explosion that will continue to deteriorate normal satellites that aren't particularly well shielded. Do you go immediately to reconstitute, knowing that you're going to have to reconstitute more frequently if you go early, because what you put up will get damaged as well over slightly longer period of time, but it will have to come down and go up? Or do you wait until the coast is clear? Do you reconstitute in the same orbit, or do you go to higher low Earth orbit to avoid the Van Allen belt? Do you go and reconstitute at medium Earth orbit or even out to geo? How much? What do you use? Do you use a satellite that can operate at all those orbits that you've designed? Because we're talking about doing that, and I think we're working on that. Or do you just use what you've got in the commercial sector? Do you do both? How do you get all of this stuff up? How much do you rely on commercial launch? Is that launch available? Do you need to start manufacturing small satellites, which are about the size of a bread box? Do you have surge capacity, much like ammo in Ukraine? Can we surge making small sats? All of that is in play in the discussion, but I don't think anyone's concluded how the game should be sorted out. So the game highlighted all those uncertainties. Some people said, oh, well, we'll win the race to reconstitute against, let's say, a China. Others said, no, we won't. You want to know whether you can win that race. Have we done those net assessments? I don't think so.
Yeah, an aspect of reconstituting is building a satellite that can withstand a blast to begin with, hardening of satellites.
Yes.
Is that under discussion?
Yeah. Oh, well, that was also one of those wonderful topics where people had very different views in the game and you couldn't tell who was right. Some people argued it was unreasonable to ask industry to harden because it adds some cost. Some people said, yeah, but not very much. Then others said, well, at least for government contracts, shouldn't we demand that they meet certain military specifications? If they want military money, shouldn't they? And others said, well, you know, maybe we need to think about alternatives to low Earth orbit. I mean, after all, most of our communication doesn't occur through satellites, but through undersea cables. And then that raised the question, well, wouldn't they attack the undersea cables? What do we have to do to protect them? Then there was discussion of, you guessed it, balloons. This is well before the recent kerfuffle. This was last June that we had these conclusions reached. So you want to start looking at that, high-flying drones. All sorts of things come into play. And the question is, how much emphasis do you give each one of these options?
The presumption is that a war in space stays in space. This game evidences that is inaccurate, because another conclusion from this game, remember, Seoul's gone, and so is most of the understanding of peace in Asia right now. Another understanding is that we need plan Bs, because the satellites cannot be reconstituted in time, because hardening is inadequate, and because our enemy will have a plan B. What does a plan B look like, Henry?
Well, it would be nice if you had non-space platforms to be able to look and communicate with your military forces and to continue to conduct commercial activity in your own country. And we do have an enormous undersea cable system, which, you know, almost all of our communication goes through. So you want to pay attention to how to protect that. I mean, after this controversy over the Nord Stream pipeline, we know people can go down and destroy things. Do we know how to protect them? I don't know whether you can reconstitute cable. Sounds difficult to me, but I mean, what's there to be had if things are destroyed? High flying things that have endurance, like drones that are, you know, everything from high flying drones, maybe solar powered drones, which can stay up for a very long time. Balloons, and you know, spy aircraft as well. How much can you rely on those to take up the burden that's lost not being carried by satellite systems? And then systems outside of low Earth orbit and space, at upper low Earth orbit, medium Earth orbit, and geosynchronous, you want to take a look at that. And as I say, I think the government is looking at that. And the question is, how quickly will they have options to operate easily and insert easily into those things? Also, can you remove things from certain orbits and put them in other orbits easily? I think a short answer right now is no, but you might be able to change that. If you had heavy lift and you put, if you will, some gas stations that will allow these satellites to fuel up and move out of their orbit. So all of that can be part of the architecture and much more. Is it? Do we have an agreed plan or plans? Not yet.
It strikes me an analogy to this is the transformation of the early internet, which was completely without security, into what we've developed today as cybersecurity defenses. There was once upon a time, I understand, that you could read anybody's email because you could just pass their house and pick it off. That is no longer the case. So let's go to the fourth lesson learned here, which is back to the lawfare question. The original incident was a launch into orbit, and there was negotiation between the adversaries. Is that a nuclear weapon satellite or not? Tell us. We are confronting you. Well, that wasn't a nuclear weapon satellite, but the North Koreans took advantage of it until they did launch a weapon that did not violate the Outer Space Treaty. So the Outer Space Treaty is inadequate. Is that under consideration?
Absolutely, it's a consideration. During the game, one of the players who's extremely well known and distinguished as a scholar and as a practitioner at a very high level in our government argued that, surely it ought to be covered by the Outer Space Treaty. And he interpreted a phrase that says, we can't put a nuclear weapon on station, or weapons of mass destruction on station. And it was pointed out to him that the Pentagon's legal counsels have ruled on that and that they don't believe that means you can't do what the North Koreans did. And the takeaway isn't who was right, but that you would sit around and argue about this during a crisis.
Henry Sikorsky of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center, he's the executive director, commenting on a war game in 2029 between those with satellites and those with ambitions to take down those satellites. And the question right now is, what is to be done in these next years? Because what happens in space doesn't stay in space. Seoul is gone. We're going to turn to other nuclear lessons of the moment. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Madden.